Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Yud Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to review a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We will be beginning today from the very bottom line on Daf Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Beis, the Mishnah. The Mishnah will contrast halachas concerning chelev and dam. Chelev is a substance that's found in animals that's sometimes translated as forbidden fats. It carries with it, for one who eats it, a kores penalty, similar to dam, blood, which also carries with it, one who eats it, a kores penalty. The items chelev versus dam have differences, and that's what this Mishnah will be emphasizing. Chomer b'chelev mi b'dam, v'chomer b'dam mi b'chelev. There are stringencies associated with chelev and over blood, and stringencies associated with blood over chelev. Chomer b'chelev, sha'chelev mo'alin bo. That means mo'alin is one who derives pleasure, benefit from the chelev of a sacrifice. If one does derive benefit or pleasure from the chelev of a sacrifice, so he will be guilty of an avera, of a violation of the sin known as mi'ilah. And that brings with it the need to bring a special sacrifice, an asham mi'ilos, and to pay for what he benefited. So chelev of a sacrifice can generate a chiyuv mi'ilah, v'chayovin alav mishum pigol v'noyser v'tomei, ma she'en kein v'dam. If one, let us say, ate the chelev of a sacrifice that was processed with an incorrect mindset, making the korban into pigol, or the korban was left over beyond its time, making it nosar, or the korban became tomei, if one ate the chelev of such a korban, we should say tomei more specifically, if one ate it when he himself was tomei tumas aguf, that means he himself was tomei, the eater was tomei, so he will be guilty of violation. Ma she'en kein b'dam, these halochas, these prohibitions, even though blood itself is prohibited, the prohibitions of pigol, noser, and tomei, and mi'ilah will not be attached to blood. Blood remains an isolated violation. V'chomer b'dam, and a stringency, or stringencies that one finds in blood over the chelev, sha'dam noheg b'vehemo v'chaya v'oif. The restriction of consuming blood applies to domesticated as well as undomesticated kosher variety animals, the oif, and birds, bein tameim, bein torim. And in addition to what we said, kosher variety animals, it applies also to unkosher type animals. Once again, the prohibition of blood is a prohibition across the boards when it comes to kosher versus non-kosher animals. The chelev eino nohegel b'vehemo tora bovad. This is in contrast to chelev, which applies only when found in kosher variety domesticated animals. In other words, when it comes to birds or kosher variety undomesticated animals, there is no chelev prohibition. The Gemara, before we learn it inside, is accompanied by a topic heading in the outside margin that we refer to as Nosei. In the Shas Ozer, which is the cornerstone of the Gemara marking system, and that's a reference to the marked Gemaras that appear on your screen, we provide topic headings and structural notes in the margins of the Gemara. When a structural note appears, it will appear under the heading Mivneh, a structure. Minohani Mili, the Gemara, we should actually read our Nosei first, and it says, Minayin Diesh Mi'ila B'Chelev. From where do we know that Chelev is subject to the Mi'ila violation? So now, turning to the Gemara itself, Minohani Mili, from where do we know this, that there is Mi'ila by Chelev? The Gemara now gives us an answer. And you'll notice we have a long answer marking that accompanies this piece of Gemara. That's indicated by the Tuf, which is a letter referring to Teretz, an answer, with a vertical descending dashed line indicating that all the lines opposite this marking constitute the answer. So Omar of Yanai, the Omar Kro. The Pasuk says, in the context of the innards of the Par Kohen Moshiach. This is a korban brought by the Kohen Gadol in the event that he errs in a halachic ruling. It says in that context of the Par Kohen Moshiach, Kasher Yuram Mishor Zevach Hashlamim, that its innards are to be processed like the innards, or treated like the innards of a Shlomim sacrifice. The Gemara asks, "V'chima lo madnu mishor zevach hashlamim me'ato?" What is it that we learn from the shor zevach hashlamim to the par kohen Mashiach, as is indicated in the pasuk? In other words, there is nothing that we really learn from shlamim to tell us about the par kohen Mashiach. Hareze bo lelamed v'nimtza lomed. The pasuk creates the appearance that shlamim is coming to teach, when in fact the issue of shlamim becomes the subject. We learn about it. That's v'nimtza lomed. We now learn about it from the par kohen Mashiach. Makish shor zevach hashlamim the par kohen Mashiach. The Torah compares these two sacrifices. Ma par kohen Mashiach yesh bo mi'ila. Just like in the case of the par kohen Mashiach, one who benefits from it will be guilty of mi'ila. Af shor zevach hashlamim yesh bo mi'ila. So too, a shlamim, one who benefits from its innards, will be guilty of mi'ila. Rashi points out that when it comes to a shlamim, it should be known that as long as it is alive, it's known as it's kochim kalim, and as such, it's not subject to the prohibition of mi'ila. What this teaches us is that the innards of a zevach shlomim, after the shlomim is shechted, and then you extract the innards, those innards that are to be put on the mizbeach to be burnt as the heavenly part of the shlomim sacrifice, those innards carry with it a mi'ila penalty. And that we learn from the Par Kohen Mashiach, which itself is called Kodshei Kodshim, a high-level form of sanctity, which always has upon it the Isser of Mi'ila. After Rabbi Yanai gave us his source for the fact or the teaching of the Mishnah that there is Mi'ila, with regard to the chelev, we should point out is one of the innards, so that once we've taught that there is mi'ila by the chelev of sacrifices, including kochim kalim, so amalei Rabbi Chanina reacts to Rav Yanai and says ke'ura zu shishana Rabbi, do you find something disgusting, something unacceptable? Ke'ura literally means disgusting, something objectionable to that which Rebbe taught. In other words, Rebbe gave us a mokor, gave us a source for this. We quote a pasuk that comes in the context of Kochim Kalim. It says, Kol Chilev Lashem, L'rabois Emre Kochim Kalim L'mila. So this pasuk shows us, and this is taught by Rebbe, this is an earlier source, if you will, an earlier suggestion for a source than that which Rav Yanai said. It's coming from Rebbe, who lived before. And this pasuk itself tells me that we're marbe, we include a murim called shim kalim, the murim of things like shlomim, that they are subject to milah. And I'm not learning it from the par koin Moshiach. Omar Abaye. Abaye responds and says, Itzrich, I need an extra source. In other words, in addition to Kol Chilif Hashem, I need the pasuk of Kashi Yuram Mizeva Mishor Zevach Hashlamim. The Ikos Rachmona Chilif, Havemino Chilif in Yisur Shtei Kloyus Lo. Had I just had the pasuk that said Chilif, like Kol Chilif Hashem, I would have thought that Miila is subject or is relevant only to the Chilif and not these other organs that are also offered on the altar. Yoseris and Shtei Kolos are not called Chelev, so maybe they're not included. Therefore, had I had just the Pasuk of Kol Chelev Lashem, I wouldn't have known to include these other organs that are part of the sacrificing of the animal, part of the offering on the altar of the animal. Kosav Rachmono Kasher Yuram. Therefore, we have this Pasuk that Rav Yanai opened up with, which was a Pasuk in the case of the Emurim of the Parakoy Mashiach. The Kosav Rachmono Kashirum, had the Torah relied just on that, Havamino Chelev Alya the Lesser Bashor Lo, I would have thought that what's called the fat tail of a lamb or of a sheep offering, that fat tail is not found in a shor, which was the pasuk of shor is an ox, literally it's a cow, which was the subject of the opening pasuk of Rav Yanai's pasuk. So had I just had Kasher Yuram, which was a pasuk dealing with a cow, I would have thought that Chelev Alya, which the fat tail, which doesn't appear in the case of a cow, so it's that kind of Chelev is not subject to Me'ilah if it's the part of a, let's say, sheep sacrifice. Therefore, Kosev Rachmana Kol Chelev. Therefore, I need the pasuk of Kol Chelev to include the fat tail, even though it's not found uniformly amongst the other sacrifices, it's only by the sheep offering. Therefore, it was necessary to write Kol Chelev to include the Chelev Ha'aliyah as being subject to Me'ilah. The Omale Rav Mori L'Razvid, I Aliyah Ikroi Chelev Titzar Bachilah. We should preface this Gemara that, in general, Chelev is a forbidden substance. However, when it comes to a person who shechted a chulin sheep for his own purposes, and it happens to have a fat tail, people ate that. But if you're saying that chelev o'alya comes under the heading of kol chelev, and it's therefore called, it's the fat tail is called chelev, therefore it should be forbidden to eat it. And this idea, this suggestion, let it be forbidden, we're not talking only about the sacrifices, we're talking about across the boards, even chulin fat tails seem to be classified as chelev, and therefore they should be also prohibited to eat. Amale, so this is the first answer, alecha makro kol chelev shor v'kesev eis. If you want to know why we eat the chelev alya, of the fat tail of mundane, of chulin sheep, this pasuk has the key to it. This pasuk enumerates the chelev of shor, kesef, ve'ez. And we learn, dover ha-shav of shor, ve'kesef, ve'ez, something that is uniform or unique to each one of these animals, the shor and the kesef and the ve'ez. That is what is prohibited to eat as chelev. However, the fat tail is something found only by a sheep. It's not uniform to these other animals. Therefore, it does not come under the prohibition of Kores. Ravashi Omar, Ravashi is a second approach. Chelbo hu'alyo ikroi, chelev stamalo ikroi. The question concerned the fat tail should be called chelev and hence come under the restriction of chelev eating. So Ravashi answers, the pasuk really answered something called chelev alone, but something that's part of a compound name like chelbo alya, that's not what the Torah intended to ban. Let's read that again in the Gemara. Rav Ashi Omar, Chel Bo Ha'Alyo Ikroi. The fat tail is called Chel Bo Ha'Alyo. It's a compound name. Chelev Stamo Lo Ikroi. But basic Chelev, well, it's not called Chelev. It's called Chelev Ho'Alyo. And therefore, it's not usher. The fat tail is not called really chaylev per se. It's called chaylev alya, and therefore it's not under the chaylev eating restriction. Well, ela me'abda lo yimalu ba. Well, if you're telling me it's not called chaylev, there should be no mi'ila. Mi'ila was something that is subject to things called chaylev. But now you're telling me it's not called chaylev, so there should be no mi'ila. And yet we know that there is mi'ila. Elo machvarto kid Rav Zvid. More likely approach would be the approach taken by Rav Zvid. We should point out that Rav Zvid appeared as number one above. Masha enkein bedam, and our Mishnah says regarding blood, there is no meila. Minohani Mili, from where do we know this? And you'll notice we have a series of triangles. These are explaining the outside margin under the heading Nosei Mivneh, and you see a triangle. These are Mekoros Di'ein Mi'ila B'dam, sources that lead to the conclusion that there's no Mi'ila by Dam. Later, the Gemara will ask, what do I need to have so many sources for the same thing? So, the Gemara's question, Minohani Mili, from where do I know that there's no Mi'ila by Dam? Amar Ula, Yamakro, Lochem, Shelochem, Yehe. The Pasuk in describing blood, it says Lochem. The Rashi quotes the Pasuk, Vani, Nasativ, Lochem. I have given the blood unto you as to serve as a source of penitence. So, Shelochem, Yehe. It's, the Pasuk is telling me it is yours. So, it's not considered something subject to Mi'ila. The Bay Rabbi Shmuel Tono Lechaper Lechapora Nisati V'lo Lemi'ila. An inference is drawn from the Pasuk that the role of Dam is to serve as a source of atonement. That means when a person brings an offering, the blood is sprinkled. The sprinkling of that blood is what causes atonement. So we infer Lechapora Nisati V'lo Lemi'ila. It was given, blood was given, was earmarked as a source of Kapora, but not as a source of, through which one would be in violation of Mi'ila. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Amar Kra. Rabbi Yochanan has a third approach. He says, the Pasuk says, who? The word who appears in the context of the blood. And the word who is a limitation expression. Hu lifnei kapora kila'achar kapora. That means the blood is to be treated before atonement as it is treated halachically after atonement. Ma liachar kapora ein bo mi'ila. Just like after it served its purpose, let's say a person sprinkled blood on the mizbeach and then he had leftover blood. So we will tell you that the leftover blood is not subject to mi'ila. So just like liachar kapora, there's no mi'ila. Af lifnei kapora ein bo mi'ila. So too, prior to the actual sprinkling of the blood, prior to that, there is no mi'ila. Well, it sounds a little arbitrary. V'eimo hu li'acha kapora kifnei kapora. Why not switch around and say that the blood after kapora is treated like blood lifnei, before the atonement? And if you learn like that, you would continue the suggestion and explain ma lifnei kapora yesh bo mi'ila. Just like before it's sprinkled, there is mi'ila. Likewise, after it's been sprinkled, there is also mi'ila, even though the mitzvah was already done. The Gemara says this suggestion that we call v'eimo is not tenable. Before going on with the answer, let's glance at the side of the Gemara. We have a topic heading, a nosei, with a mivneh. One point that we will emphasize is Dovar Shinase Mitzvaso Ein Molin Bo. Something that was already used for the through which we accomplished a mitzvah. So that item, once the mitzvah is done, is no longer subject to Me'ila. The blood, once it is sprinkled, we learn, based on this principle of Dover Shinasa Mitzvah, so once it's been used to accomplish the mitzvah of atonement, so it's no longer subject to Me'ilah. The Gemara, we should point out that in the Gemara text, we've dashed underlined the answer, Ein l'cho Dover Shinasa Mitzvah, so umolin bo. So let's read the last three lines again. The Ema, why not say, Hu la'achar kapara k'lefnei kapara? Let's treat blood after it's been used for atonement, after it's been used for the sprinkling, as if it were before the atonement. And the result would be, there is Me'ilah. So the Gemara answers, Ein l'chadover shenasim mitzvah molin bo. There is no example of something that the mitzvah was already accomplished, and that item through which the mitzvah was accomplished would still carry with it a Me'ilah penalty. The Gemara asks, and we will be challenging this as we go along in the Gemara, by citing different examples of mitzvahs which seem to carry with them an iser hanoah, an iser of benefiting from them, even though the mitzvah was already done. We should point out as we go on in the Gemara, we have a nosei mivneh heading that accompanies this. And we read already the first point, namely, Dover Shinasim is also ein molin bo. And we will also see a house form, and we'll be calling them 1 through 3. These are 3 shlovim, lahasbir, lama yesh me'ilah, b'trumas hadeshen. 3, or we should just say, examples or explanations as to why there is me'ilah by the trumas hadeshen. Afal pi shenasis mitzvah, so even though the trumas hadeshen, which is the ash that comes from the top of the mizbech, even though it represents the mitzvah having already been done. In other words, the burning of the sacrifice. It turns to ash. That's after you did what you were supposed to do. So it's a case of even though Onasis mitzvah, so b'chozos, and the Gemara tells us that there is Me'ilah by the Trumas Hadeshen. If one takes this ash and benefits it from it personally, he will be in violation of Me'ilah. So what we want to know is, b'chozos, we say, ein lilmod mimenu l'dvar machirim. So that even though, by the Trumas Hadeshen, there is Me'ilah, even though Nasis Mitzvaso, we're not going to learn from it to other areas. There's something special about the exception of Trumas Hadeshen, insofar as it is an example of something, Shinasis Mitzvaso, and still there is Me'ilah. So the Gemara now continues from the point where after we dashed, underlined the answer of the Gemara, Ein l'chol dover shenasim mitzvaso molin bo, explaining why by the dam after kapora there is certainly no Me'ilah. And from that we said also, even before it's used, it also will not carry with it a Me'ilah penalty. So the Gemara now challenges, are you sure that there is nothing after which the mitzvah was done, the Me'ilah doesn't linger on, that there isn't still Me'ilah to it? Hare, Trumas Hadeshen, the ashes left over from sacrifices that were burnt on the Mizbeach, Dinase Mitzvaso, the mitzvah was accomplished, the ash represents the burning of the sacrifices that was ordained, that was supposed to be done, so the mitzvah was done, and yet Umol and Bo, we know there is Me'ilah Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, V'samo Eitzel HaMizbeach. You shall take the ash of the Deshen. Trumas HaDeshen is a reference to a scooping out of an initial amount or initial quantitative ash from the top of the Mizbeach, and it's then put at the side of the Mizbeach. It's to be placed there. Something miraculous took place, and it was eventually absorbed into the ground. But that placing next to the Mizbeach indicates that there is still Me'ilah subject to the ash. Well, why isn't the ash an example of something that the mitzvah was already done? Why does the Torah insist on, we're not asking why there's Me'ilah, the Torah simply says that there indicates that there still is Me'ilah with it. What bothers us in this sugya is, why not learn from that to other areas? And if we would, then it would come out that blood also, even though it was sprinkled, would still be subject to Me'ilah. And we say that's not the case. So the question again is, why is it that we do not learn from the Trumas HaDeshen? Answer. And here we have the house marking, which represents a stage in trying to understand this. Mishum Dehavi Trumas HaDeshen U'Bigdei Kehuna Shnei Ksuvim Emboim Keachot. The issue concerning the ash from the Mizbeach, the ash that's removed every morning from the Mizbeach, and Bigdei Kuna have something in common. They are what's called Shnei Ksuvim Avoyim Keachot, two psukim that come to teach me the same principle. V'chol Shnei Ksuvim Avoyim Keachot Ein Malamu. When you have two separate items that come to teach me the same thing, we say that whatever they are illustrating applies only to them. That's Ein Melamdin. We don't extrapolate from them to other things. So, just to go over this point, Trumas HaDeshen, we saw that even though the mitzvah was done already, there still is a prohibition of benefiting from it. Likewise, with the Bigdei Kehuna, the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, once they are used, even though they were used already, they are not to be used anymore. That would show us that by Bigdei Kehuna, it too is an example of Nasis Mitzvah, so, and still there is Me'ilah to it. So you have two cases that are, we call exceptions, two exceptional cases, where the mitzvah was already done and there still is Me'ilah, and as a result of there being two examples telling me the same thing, we say that they are Shnei Ksuvim Avoyim Keachot and the Ein Melamdin. Well, the Gemara says, Honicha l'Rabbanan de'amri v'nicham sham l'amish tunin geniza. What we just said is true according to the Rabbanan, but there is a controversy concerning this issue between the Rabbanan and Rebbe Dosa and regarding the Bigdei Kehuna, this clothing of the Kohen Gadol. According to the Rabbanan, who says that the Pasuk by the Bigdei Kehuna says, V'nicham sham, you shall leave them there. Plate milami shetunim geniza. That's after they were used by the Kohen Gadol for Yom Kippur, they are to be buried. So we can say that the fact that we're taught that they have to be put away and buried, that indicates that if one would benefit from it, he would be guilty of Me'ilah. So if you adopt this approach of the Rabbanan with regard to Bigdei Kehuna, that there is Me'ilah, and the Samo Eitzel HaMizbeach shows us there's Me'ilah by the Trumas HaDeshen, so we have Shnei Ksuvim Avoyim Keachot, and we do not learn from them. We're saying then only by Trumas HaDeshen and Bigdei Kehuna would there still be Me'ilah, even though the mitzvah was done, but not by other things, including blood. Well, the Gemara is saying this analysis works out only according to the Rabbanan, though. Elo l'Rabbi Dosa, d'yomar shelo yishtamesh, ben l'yoma kipura macher, ma'ikol ha'meimar. But according to Rabbi Dosa, that says that the posuk by the Bigdei Kehuna, the Bigdei Kohen Gadol that said v'nicham sham, simply tells me that they should not be used again for the next Yom Kippur. It's every year there have to be a new set of clothing for the Kohen Gadol. So if v'nicham sham simply says don't use it again for the next Yom Kippur, but you could use it for other things, therefore we would have the Bigdei Kehuna as an example of Nasis Mitzvaso and Ein Mo'alin Bo. So you wouldn't have two psukim anymore teaching me the same thing. You'd be left only with Trumas HaDeshen as an example of something that was Nasis Mitzvaso, and still there is Me'ilah. And as such, I would think that maybe that should apply to other things as well, including the blood. So, Ma'ikol HaMeimar, as our question basically is, what is going to be our source that for Dam, even though for Dam, which was Nasis Mitzvah, there is no longer Mila, and I'm not to learn from Trumas HaDeshen. Elo Mishum, Davoy, Trumas HaDeshen, Ve'Glarufo, Shnei Ksuvim, Boim Keachot. Because Trumas HaDeshen, along with a new mitzvah, Egla Rufa, are two psukim that come to teach me the same thing. And the rule is, I don't learn from them. What are we then saying? We're saying that Trumas HaDeshen, which we mentioned already, and Egla Arufa, This is a calf that's brought in the event that a dead person is found, a murdered person is found between two cities. The city closer to it brings a, and this is not a sacrifice, but it processes an eglah, a calf, that's arufa, whose neck is broken. And that is necessary to be done as long as we don't know who the murderer was. The halacha tells us that eglah arufa, even though the mitzvah was done, it's still also to benefit from. So, Trumas Hadeshen is not alone, and therefore it is part of it's part of this principle of Shnei Ksuvim Arboim Ke'achad along with Eglah Rufa, and therefore I won't learn from them. I won't learn that Nasis Mitzvosa there still is Me'ilah. In other words, that idea that there would still be Me'ilah applies only to Trumas Hadeshen and Eglah Rufa. The Gemara continues, Honicho Lamad Omar Ein Malamdin. This works out according to the approach that says that Shnei Ksuvim Arboim Ke'achad, in fact, don't teach me to other topics. And in our case, to teach me over to Dam. Elo Lamad Yomar Melamdin Maigel Meimar, but there are those that say that when you have Shnei Ksuvim Arboim Ke'achad, for example, Trumas Hadeshen, Eglah Rufa, are examples of Nasis Mitzvoso, and still there is Mila. There's a Shita that says that even though they're two psukim, we can learn from that to other things. If we learn from that to other things, or we learn from them to other things, that will come out that there will still be Me'ilah by Dam, even though it was already sprinkled. And yet we were taught in the Mishnah not that way. We should point out the case of the Eglah Arufa. We mentioned that it was a ceremony done when a murder victim was found between two cities. We know, however, once the arufa is done, it has to be buried. In other words, you can't benefit from it, even though the mitzvah was already done. So the Gemara continues. We'll read again, second line from the bottom. Hornicho l'man d'omer ein malamdin. Things will work out well as far as our issue concerning the blood, that there's no more me'ilah after it was sprinkled. That's because ein malamdin from these two cases. El l'man d'omer malamdin ma'ikle me'imah. But according to the opinion, it says when you have shnei ksuvim haboyim ke'achad, I can use them as a precedent for other things. So then what are you going to say? What about the blood? Could it very well be that the blood too, after it was sprinkled, there still would be a me'ilah penalty? So the Gemara answers, Trei mi'uti ksivi. There are two limitation expressions found over here by the Trumas Hadeshen. It's a hacha ksiv. By the Trumas Hadeshen, it says v'samo. You shall place it, meaning it and nothing else. And hasam ksiv ho'arufa. Also an expression of limitation, which conveys the following, that only in those cases will you have the mitzvah already accomplished, and still there will be a prohibition, an iser mi'ilah, a prohibition of benefiting from it. But not with regard to other things. And hence, dam, being that the sprinkling was done already, the residual dam does not carry with it a mi'ilah penalty. Now the Gemara goes back to what we had illustrated with triangles. Three psukim that seem to teach me the same thing. We saw three psukim. By Dam, we saw Ula, Tanu Rebbe Shmuel, and Rebbe Yochanan in the middle of Kuf Yud Zayin Omed Aleph. Three psukim, three opinions, telling me that by Dam, after it's been sprinkled, there's no more Me'ilah. Utlasa kroi lama libadam. Why do I need three psukim for blood? So chadim ute dam minosar. One pasuk tells us that blood is not included under the penalty of nosar. If a person had, let us say, a sacrifice that was left over and didn't eat it on the during the right time, if he eats the meat after the allotted time passes, he's guilty of having eaten nosar, which actually carries with it a kores penalty. If one were to do it b'shogeg, so then it means inadvertently he would have to bring a korban. What we're told here is that if one were to have dam from an animal that was left over, it would not generate a penalty for on account of its being noser. Of course, it goes without saying that it still is a penalty of eating blood, but there isn't an additional penalty of noser. And when we speak about additional penalty, the manifestation of that, if had there been an additional violation, there would have been multiple or a second korban chatas brought. V'chad l'mutei memila, another purpose, another role of the additional, the next pasuk was to exclude blood from me'ila. V'chad l'mutei mituma, and the third pasuk, I need to exclude blood from the violation of tumah, which would mean that if someone was tamei, he had experienced tumah seguf, and he ate blood of the sacrifice, he would be guilty of having eaten blood, but he wouldn't be guilty of having eaten it while in a state of tumah. Avol mipigol lo tzorech kra, but as far as excluding blood from pigol, I don't need a pasuk for that. Disnan, the rule itself will clearly exclude dam from the realm of pigol. The rule says kol shiyesh lo matirin bein lo adam bein lo mizbeach chayavin lov mishum pigol. Any item that something else comes to matir it, to allow it, so items that have something else being matir them, so those items are chayav ala mishum pigol. Take, let's say, the meat of a sacrifice. Is one allowed to eat the meat of the sacrifice as soon as it's slaughtered? The answer to that is no. You have to sprinkle the blood in order for it to be allowed to be eaten. That's just one example. So the meat of a sacrifice is something that is yesh lo matirin. However, vedam gufei matirhu, blood isn't waiting for something else to make the blood allowed. The blood is the vehicle that causes other things to become allowed. And as a result of that, we see from here that there is no pigol that applies to blood. Once again, pigol applies to only things that have something else being matir them. That is the end of the eighth perek, perek kolabos, and we now begin the ninth perek. We have, as you scan ahead, a double underline in this Mishnah with dots in it. This is explained in the outside margin under the Nosei Mivneh, the topic heading and structural note that are combined into one note. You see this double underline featured, and we've written Dvarim Hametamin Tumas Oichlin Velo Tumas Nevelos. We will learn about things that convey tumas ochlin, that means it's a ritual impurity that applies to food items, but it won't apply to the realm of tumas nevelos. Tumas nevelos is the tumah associated with a dead, with a carcass of an animal, a dead animal, an animal that died as opposed to shechted. It conveys tumah to people. Tumas nevelos, called also tumah hamura, a stringent form of tumah, contrasted with tumas ochlin that doesn't convey tumah to people. So the Mishnah has a list of items that we can say are associated with, was associated with an animal, and part of it has to do with the cooking up of the meat, that convey tumas ochlin, but do not convey tumas nevelos. The Mishnah, ha'orva roitiv v'hakipa. The or is the skin. The roitiv is it's the jelly that congeals around meat, cooked meat. Kipa are spices. V'olo. Rashi regarding olo says b'begum v'gemora meforesh. V'atzamos, the Mishnah goes on to say bones, v'agidim, gidim are sinews, v'karnayim, horns, v'tlafayim, the hooves, mitzdarfen l'tami tumas, ochlin v'avolo tumas nevelos. Mitzdarfen means they join up. That means that if I had, let's say, less than a shear of tumas ochlin, and I have less than the required amount of food to generate tumas ochlin, and then one of these substances is mashlimit. The shiur for tumas ochlin is an egg quantity of food item. So let's say I have actual meat, but I have less than a kibbetz of meat, and there's the jelly that is sticking to it. And if I include the jelly in it, in my calculations of size, I will then say the meat, the majority of meat, and the minority amount of jelly add up together to be a full egg quantity of substance. So that is what the Mishnah just said, that it's mitzarif to create tumas ochlin, that that will now be able, if it becomes tumay, to convey tuma to other food items. Avolo tumas nevelos, if this is coming from an animal that dropped dead, so you have the meat and the kippah. When it comes to tumas nevelos, then it won't apply. In other words, these items, the list of items here, are not mitzarif to complete a shiur necessary to convey tumas nevelos. Kayotse bo, on a similar note, hashochet behema tumea le'ovei kechavim u'mefarcheses. It's a very specific case featured here. An unkosher variety animal, a pig or a horse, were slaughtered for a Gentile, and the animal is still flapping around. The farcheses is the last, it's the jerking action as an animal's life breath is departing. Mitame tumas ochlin, avolo tumas nevelos, ad shetomus. Let's say if an animal, like we just described, a slaughtered pig, we are telling you here that meat that's taken from it, or the pig itself, is capable of conveying tumas ochlin, even though it's still flapping around. However, it's not considered a nevela until it dies, until it stops its movement. O ad shiotis es rosha, or until it is totally decapitated. In that situation, the body might still be flapping around, but it will already be called nevela. Riba l'tama tumas ochlin, mima shiriba l'tama tumas neves. We see from this Mishnah that there is more chance of tumas ochlin arising than tumas nevelos. Rebuta Omer, ha'olol hamachunos im yesh bo kizayis b'mokom echod chayov olov. If you have gathered together pieces of olol, and you have an olive quantity of olol in one place, then there will be a chiyuv. What kind of chiyuv are we talking about? So if we look in the Rashi, toward the end of the Rashi commentary, before he starts commenting on the Gemara, Rashi, at the end of the Mishnah commentary, we can say, it says, Hamachunas, Hanesev Mokum Echad. The person gathered the olo into one spot. Since he granted importance to it, Shekonsoi, by the mere fact he gathered the pieces together, the pieces of olo together, Lo botil, it doesn't lose its significance. V'choshiv kibosur nevela, v'chayev olav imnogabo, v'nichnas lamikdash o ochal kodesh. Since we're considering it like nevela, so the penalties of one who touches nevela and then eats a sacrifice, or touches nevela and then enters the base of Mikdash, will apply here as well. Bear in mind, as we're speaking about a case of olol, pieces of olo that were gathered together that equal a kezias in size. The Gemara points out that we have a brisa that supports that which that we saw in the Mishnah. Amongst other things that were taught in the Mishnah, we have olo, we have atzamos which surround the marrow, which is something that's edible. Since the atzamos surround something that's edible, they take on the definition of a shomer. Shomer is like a peel, or in this case a bone, that guards upon the food contained within. So we're asking right now, from where do I know that the skin itself is not mitzarif to the kezias of nevela, even though the skin happens to be considered a shomer? Tanina l'hadu tana rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source that Tanino means our Mishnah teaches or supports that which is taught in the following Brisa. It says, and you can see I have a frame section, 2 points, Shomrim Lutuma Kala. There's a concept of Shomrim, the, as we mentioned before, the peel or the covering of food. So this concept of Shomer applies to Tuma Kala, Velo Shomrim Lutuma Hamura. And there's no din of Shomrim when it comes to Tuma Hamura. Therefore, if let us say you didn't have a Kizayas of Nevela, you didn't have the required amount of meat, Nevela meat, to convey Tuma, and you had this skin or a Shomer attached to it, and it would have be a more now than the required quantity, it still would not convey Tumas Nevelos. At this point, the Gemara goes over the 2 points mentioned in the Braisa that there is a concept of Shomrim when it comes to Tumah Kala. Tumah Kala is Tumas Ochlin that we referred to before, and that there is no concept of Shomrim when it comes to Tumah Hamura. And we explained this in the context of joining up or adding up. So this Braisa is borne out by what the Mishnah taught. At this point, the Gemara discusses Shomrim, and on the next Omid, on the next Daf, we have a diamond around the word Yodos. These are two somewhat separate topics. We felt it necessary to emphasize these terms because the Gemara will discuss in depth halachas concerning Shomrim and halachas concerning Yodos, which we'll explain later. On the outside margin, we've written Minolon de Shomrim mitstarfen l'tuma kala, tumas ochlin, velo l'tuma chamura, which is tumas nevelos. As we continue in the Gemara says, Shomrim l'tuma kala minolon. Where do I know the Aleph point, the first point, that Shomrim, that which guards food, like peels, whatever is peels and skin, that's called a shomer. From where do I know that it joins up with the less than kezayas of bosar, to or less than kebetz of bosar? Kebetz is the egg quantity, which is the minimum quantity for tumas ochlin. So from where do I know that? So the Gemara answers the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. The pasuk says, "I'll call zera zerua asher yizorea." We learn from that kederach shemnei odom motzim lizria. This pasuk features, without getting into details, this pasuk is the source of Tumas Ochlin. Because the pasuk describes Ochlin, and if it was Mukhshir Lekabel Tumah, so it will become Tomei. When describing the Ochlin over here, we're talking about seeds. And the Bryce elaborates and says that this, we're talking about seeds as they are when they're taken out to be planted. Kederach shpnei odom mosim lizria chita beklipasa usora beklipasa usorim veadoshim beklipasan. The wheat, the barley, the lentils, when taken out to be planted, they're taken out with their shell on it. You plant the seed with the shell around it. So, being that this pasuk is coming from the realm of tumas ochlin, we understand that ochlin is defined by something, some food item, even if the shell happens to be on it. And as we said before, if you have less than a kevetz of ochlin, and the shell is mashlim the shear, completes the amount that is required, there will be tumas ochlin. However, the Gemara goes on, velo shomrim l'tuma chamura. However, everything we said till this point will not apply to the shomer, the peel or the skin that's attached to actual nevela meat. So that if you lack the kezias of nevela and the skin would mitzdarif, that would not be considered a tziruf. It wouldn't be considered a joining up, and there would be no tumas nevelos. So the Gemara now focuses on this second point, which we call beis. Below shomrim l'tuma chamura min olam. From where do we know this? The Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara gives us a source. The source itself is a little bit vague. And the Gemara at the top of Daf Kuf Yud Ches, second line from the top, will be asking my Koma, what are we telling him? Telling you, and then we'll have things restated in a clearer fashion. So in this source, which, not to forget why we're bringing it in to discuss Tuma Chamura, that's Tumas Nevelos, and the Tumas Nevelos is conveyed by the meat of an animal that dropped dead or was improperly slaughtered. The skin that's attached with the shomer will not join up to create the minimum shear of Tuma Chamura. So from where do we know this? The Tana Rabbanan. Beniv Losa. That is the Pasuk quote. We say velo beor she'ein olel kezayis basar. In order for there to be tuma chamura, tumas nevela, it has to be the meat and not a case of skin that's lacking a kezayis of basar. Yochal hanogea keneged basar me'achorav lo yehei tamei. Could it be that if one touches the other side of the meat, in other words, he touches the skin on the other side of which there is meat, will the person who touched the skin not be tamei? Lo yehei tamei? Tamei lomar yitma. What we learn from this is by touching the skin, one does become tamei. Well, at the ratio though, it said there's tumas nevela velo be'or shein olel kezayis basar, seemingly indicating that or does not communicate tuma. The Seifa seems to say that or would communicate tuma. So my komar, what is really being taught over here? Omar Rava, the Amri Law Kedi, Amri Law, another version is Kedi. Kedi means without a name. Chisuri Mechaser Vachikotani. We have to restate the little source that we read already and make sense of it. So Chisuri Mechsera, the Mishnah or the Tanaic source that we read was deliberately left brief. The Hachi Kotani, but to fill, you have to fill in the following to understand what it's teaching. Beniv Lasa, same opening. It says Velo Beor Shein Olav Kezayis. Once again, Velo Beor Shein Olav Kezayis Bosor Veor Mashlima LeKezayis. When is there Tumas Nevela? When you've got a Kezayis of Nevela, Kezayis of meat, and not the case of or shein olav kezayis basar veor mashlim kezayis, where you have a piece of animal skin and attached to it is something less than a kezayis, and altogether it works out to be a kezayis that will not create tumas nevela. Yochol shani motzi af or sheyesh olav kezayis basar hanogea keneged basar echor yochol lo yei tamei the afilu maise yad nami lo avit. Could it be that if I have a piece of meat or a piece of skin attached to it, a kezayis of basar, a full kezayis of basar, and someone were to come along and touch the skin on the other side of which is a full olive quantity of nevela meat, would there be no tumah communicated simply because I touched the skin? Which would show that the skin doesn't function even as a yad. A yad literally is a handle. A handle is something that conducts tuma. Could this be? Talmud lomar yitma. So this tells me that if you have a full kezayis, then there will be a communication of tuma, and the fact that you happen to touch the skin doesn't interfere with the conveyance of the tuma, because the skin will function as a yad. A yad is an institution in halacha referring to a conduit or a handle, something that conducts tuma from one point to the other. In this case, from one side of the skin to the other where I am currently touching it. So what have we seen here? That as far as the skin serving as a shomer and hence being mashlim the shiur that we see here, there is no hashloma, there's no completing a quantity by using the skin as figuring in the total amount. The skin does not figure as something that joins up. But if you have already a pre-existing complete kezias quantity, olive quantity of nevela meat, then that will be metama, even if you happen to be touching the skin to which the meat is attached. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.